Hello, ladies and gents, and welcome to Season 2, Episode 27 of the Homesteading UK podcast. I'm Alan, I'm here with my mate Mike. How you doing, Mike?
I'm freezing.
Yeah, it's cold, isn't it? What's going on?
I'm not cold. I wasn't cold earlier, but I've got cold sitting on the beach.
No
one's getting any atmospherics now, mate.
No, we tried recording on the beach, didn't we, tonight? And yeah, that wasn't working. It's too windy.
So we've come in. We're sitting in the comforts of a car.
Yeah, literally. Sitting on the seafront in the car. But we actually just come off the beach. It's just started raining, so we timed that well, I have to say.
Yeah, we have.
And it is a bit chilly out there now tonight with the wind blowing off the coast and that. A lot of people running past, though, and making the most of it, I guess. But yeah, it's a bit cold to be sitting around outside. So anyway, we thought we'd better catch up because it has been a while now, hasn't it? I reckon nearly 6 weeks.
Nearly 6 weeks. And yeah. We almost hooked up the other day, but it was a bit busy. We
just both too much going on, isn't there?
It's all been going, mate.
I knew my August was going to be busy. So apologies we didn't get one out in the middle of August as we might normally try to do. But it was always likely that was going to happen, as I mentioned in the last episode. And
yeah, definitely.
Well, it's good to be able to catch up, mate, because although we've seen each other, it's kind of almost been in passing, hasn't it? We've been really busy when we have been able to catch up and not really chance to chat about what's going on. So it'd be nice to just catch up with where you're at and what's going on. And I also put a thing on the Facebook group earlier about if anyone had any questions, and we've actually had a couple of questions we might try and answer today. So
absolutely, mate.
We'll have a go at doing
it's
that.
It's always nice when people get back to us, isn't it, and stuff.
Well, like I sometimes they're the best ones, aren't they? I'd chuck them out to you almost on the spot and you... Yeah. Give us a reply.
Even though it is lashing down with raining in nearly, it is still nice out. And it's just awesome being out, isn't it, mate?
Well, it's just nice to be.
I never mind being by the coast and just seeing the waves and that.
Well, it's a lovely place to be. I mean, we were down here end of last week. Our visitors from abroad staying with us for a while. It's one of the reasons I've been so busy. And we were down here and one of them was desperate to come and swim in the English Channel before she went home.
Right.
And I don't know why, it's just something, but she was like really keen to come and do it. I was like, oh, let's just make it happen.
There's nothing wrong with that, mate.
No, and so we came down in a thunderstorm.
Nothing wrong with that.
And the kids were all out in the sea. And
well, it was just a little bit more that.
It was proper raining when we were here as well. It was really raining hard.
Got to see a true English seafront in the summer, but lashing with rain.
Yeah. And like two English people in the summer, we're on the beach regardless of the weather.
Yeah.
Very funny.
That's what it's all about.
But the water's warm. And the air's
cold.
Well,
I've been in swimming today.
Yeah.
Been in swimming today and got the tide times a bit wrong. So it's low tide now and it doesn't fish well here at low tide. But sorted my kit out, put a rod out for a bit, didn't get anything. But still good to keep your skill level up, mate.
I think on another evening, with better weather, it's a good time here to get mackerel. With the right tide and the right weather.
If it was high tide, it'd be still all right.
I think it's probably still time to come and try that. And I haven't done much of that yet this year, so that's something I would like to try and get done before it's too late. We've got a little bit of time, I reckon, still.
Oh, definitely.
And then obviously looking towards wintertime fishing as well, aren't we? And thinking about getting out here and you know, going off to some flatfish or whatever it might be.
Yeah.
Doing a bit of that, which I think we mentioned we're going to try and do before and kind of need to make it happen, I reckon.
Yeah, I think so. And we were just discussing before we came on our, you know, some of the ventures this year, like all years, some things you have successes and failures, and it's been a, you know, poor year for the bees, isn't it, this year? And I mean, I've only done two lots of blackberrying, but my freezer space, what I've got, is full now. So short of doing a straight from pick to jam, I'm not going to be doing a lot more of
that. There are so many blackberries around.
I know, it's a cracking year for them. One year I haven't got a blooming freezer.
Yeah.
But we'll just do what we can do. And like I say, we've got some other ideas, haven't we? So maybe this will be a bit of a autumn and a winter of up in a different skill set. You know, if we haven't got a lot of honey to take off, which we won't have, and then we look at improving some other skills. And you know, maybe we could do some butchery. Maybe we could do some game butchery. Maybe we could do some sea fishing and try and get those skills going, you know, and see what else comes about, really.
Let's go there, because it's, like you say, it's winners and losers every year. And I think, you know, we knew, let's go with the bees, first of all, because we knew coming into this year, once we started looking in the hives, we knew that last year had been a difficult year for us.
We've had two on a spin, haven't we?
We've had two in a row now, where we've lost most of our colonies over the winter.
Yeah.
We had to then build back up again, haven't we? And I've managed to get four swarms that I've caught, and there's four colonies alive at the apiary that I mainly look at.
Yeah.
And then we moved three just after we did the last recording, didn't we?
Yeah.
Up to a friend's house.
And there's two more there as well.
And there's two more elsewhere. So we've got, I reckoned it was about 9 or 10 going into the winter.
Yeah. So if we could get a few of them through, we'd be really
just need, well, I think we're going to need to try and work on it. What we haven't got is any surplus this year, and that is certainly not where I am anyway. The bees I've been looking after, there won't be any surplus there. It's just whether that one colony we brought through has got anything on it. Is that the Crossing Ham one?
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, it had a super on it a long time ago, so go and have a look.
Might be the only beer.
But what we're talking, 20 jars at most.
Yeah.
At most,
yeah.
But it's nice to have a bit of fresh in it.
Well, it's always nice to have a bit of new honey. I mean, just the act of extracting it, mate.
Yeah.
Just doing that in it. But I don't think it's very likely this year that we'll be recording doing it, because there won't be much to do.
No.
So it's unfortunate. But then, Winners, how's it going on the farm? You've been producing a lot, I guess.
Absolutely, is been chocker blocker. Crops. There's been some gaps in between harvesting and replanting, and that's mainly down to the fact that one of the tunnels had some damage, and then I lost a couple of subsequent sowings of brassicas, which if the third tunnel had been ready, it would have all been planted up, the whole lot. But I was holding things in plugs and pots for a very long time, and then some got pest damage or pot bound, so I had to move those through to chickens, re-sowed, and then even some of those secondary sowings, you know, it's the ground still wasn't ready for them to go in, so they've gone, and I'm on tertiary sowings now.
Yeah.
But that means that some of the crops are not great, because I've had to, you know, I can't do Brussels sprouts now.
No.
I can't sow them now. I have to use what I've got left. And some things have managed that better. The kale has managed it okay, and I mean, obviously you can keep sowing kale for a little while, but the kale plants I had have gone in, and they've been all right. My purple sprouting broccoli, though, has been really tricky.
Because
obviously, you know, really you should be sowing that by the end of June, the majority of varieties. And then I had that from June, all of July, and then all of August. And by the time I was putting it in, a lot of it had been hit by cabbage whites. But
Did you have the same problem, Mike? Because I did a load of sowings right at the end of June, when it had obviously been really hot. And I literally got, like, I forget what it was, but a variety of different, not just one crop, but beetroot and lettuce and some brassicas and all that. And they got to about an inch high, and then they just stopped.
No, I haven't had any of that.
They just didn't do anything from there. Like, literally didn't progress at all.
Right. Was that when the weather changed?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's been, because the polytunnels are fairly consistent in their temperature. I mean, the light level dropped, but for me, it was more that I had crops that I'd sown early.
Yeah.
So June was the end of the time to sow them. I'd been sowing since March, April.
Yeah.
And they were too big. And so then I tried to do another subsequent sowing, probably end of June. And then, of course, the germination was a bit more hit and miss, because it is right at the end of that.
Yeah.
There is one variety that you can sow later, but I didn't have it.
Mm.
That seed, I think it's called Red Alert or some red, not Red something. Red, I can't remember what it's called. But I didn't have any, so anyway, I've had to take the loss with that.
Yeah.
But there are collard greens, celeriac, swedes, and a lot of spring cabbages.
Yeah.
But funnily enough, I had savoys last year that got absolutely thumped by whitefly.
That's right, I remember.
But because they were late, they're only about 2 inches high at the moment.
Yeah.
You know, and so they're going to be small savoy cabbages, don't get me wrong. Yeah. But they look all right.
Yeah.
So I'll be putting the savoys in. I've done red cabbage this year, and that looks all right.
Yeah.
Calabos is the name of the one I've done.
Oh, yeah.
Whether it's any good or not, I don't know.
I've grown that before very successfully. I have to say, at times, it's nice cabbage.
Yeah. So I've never grown red cabbage, really. Mm. So I've got that, and then I've got probably three different types of spring cabbage. And then I have done some Spring Hero, which is the only one I know that will actually form a tight head.
Yeah.
And it's not too late to sow that now, even if you haven't got any, you can get hold of some of that. Mm. But the cabbage, I want a cabbage now, though, and I've missed that.
Right.
Because the ones that I had sown March, I'd be eating them now.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
You know, and I haven't got that, and I'm missing that brassica flavour, which I would normally have now, but because of the how it worked out with the spaces inside the tunnels and the builds of the tunnels and the things that stopped that. You know, we are having to just wait and be patient on that, but I've got a lot of beans.
Well, my French beans, climbing beans, are just finishing up.
Wow.
Yeah, so I had a good crop of early dwarf beans. Yeah. And the climbers have kind of done their thing.
Really?
Yeah.
So they've sort of give up, have they already?
Yeah, I think possibly. I mean, it could be one or two things. Obviously, I was away for a bit. And although I had somebody coming in and picking for me, I think probably we've missed enough that the plants have kind of gone, oh, I've done my job now, kind of thing. But also, I was cropping them quite early. The dwarf beans hadn't finished and the climbing beans were cropping, and that was probably 6 weeks ago.
Wow, that is. Yeah, well, six, seven weeks of cropping is pretty much what you get.
Yeah, so it's probably about right. What I missed is I did sow another dwarf thing of dwarf beans, but a lot of stuff I've direct sown this year has just been eaten.
Right.
So I direct sowed dwarf beans, they've got eaten. And just before I went away on holiday, I planted out some little plugs of main crop peas.
Yeah.
Probably only a couple of inches high. And then sowed some more seed, and I came back from holiday and they've just been munched by something that's just disappeared.
Right.
So I've lost a few crops like that way.
Yeah.
But otherwise it's not been a bad season for other things as well though.
No worries.
Yeah, it's not been bad for other things, like my runner beans doing really well.
They're still going.
They're still going, yeah. Right. Yeah, they're a bit later starting though, so they're just really getting into their rhythm now.
Our runners are kicking on now. Yeah. My bolotta, I think I'll have a few, but nowhere near as many as last year.
No, I've got mine.
That's because of the season, and you know, chatting to the people who've been growing vegetables all their, you know, their whole life, you know, market gardeners and a few other farmer chaps. They literally said it's been the weirdest year for growing outdoors, because when you wanted the rain, you had really baking sun, and then when you wanted the sun, you had the opposite. We had 6 weeks of cooler rain, dull weather, and it was like the whole two seasons were flipped over. But and when you think about last year, it was the other way around, and we had, you know, the sweet corn was amazing, the bolotta beans were amazing, all of those things were fabulous. Whereas this year, you know, you couldn't get them started almost because it was too hot. And, you know, you were constantly watering. Anything that you put in outside was getting parched and scorched. And then now it's got going. It's dull and manky. Yeah.
I'll tell you what, though. I've had a really good crop of tomatoes this year, although now my tomato plants in the allotment have all got blight on them.
Well, perhaps the early sun really got them going, as long as you kept them well hydrated.
Well, I think the mountain magic have done really well. And they're the ones that will continue to grow through the blight. And although it will shorten the crop and reduce the crop, I will still get a good crop off them. But I've already taken well in excess of 30 kilos of tomatoes off the ones I've
billions
planted.
Billions of tomatoes.
Yeah. And they're really good as well. I've been so pleased.
I can't
with
kill
them.
The garden, Pearl.
No, right? Can you not?
So those ones, I put five of them in a Tesco crate.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, well too much.
Yeah.
Well too much. And not fed them. Oh, no, I gave them a handful of pellet chicken manure. Yeah. There's not even enough soil in there. The watering's intermittent. They stopped making flowers really a fortnight ago.
Yeah.
And every time I go in there to dig them up, they're covered in red tomatoes. I can't do it. I'm not even watering them or anything. They just keep going.
Yeah.
So there's obviously something something doing well for them inside the polytunnel. Yeah. But really, they were just to get the early crop of small cherry tomatoes, but you could still go in there and pick billions of them.
Yeah.
But what's been nice to see is that I've got the watering of the other tomatoes much more consistent.
Yeah.
And as yet, touch wood, touch everything, no blossom end rot.
Okay.
You know, the uptake of water obviously is far more consistent because it's automated.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's consistent and it's ground level.
Yeah.
So I'm using drip lines this year for the first year, and
You
know, these are other reasons why it's taken time to get going, is because we're still putting in infrastructure, and hopefully that can just kick on year on year. But I'm growing about five or six varieties, and they've all got different characteristics and different flavours, and they look really good. You know, now we're doing some retail with some of the stuff we're producing.
Mixed panics, presumably,
Like, and also being able to say to someone, extol the different virtues of, well, if you want to just eat them straight, it's hard to get past Sun Gold, isn't it?
Yeah.
Everyone likes them. And certainly if you're going to try a variety of tomatoes, don't eat that one till last.
Yeah.
because of the sweetness. Yeah. It doesn't mean it's necessarily got the best flavour by any stretch, but it's hard for people to get past that.
Yeah.
Whereas I've enjoyed those sort of purple, what are they called, black opals. I've enjoyed them.
I've had a few of those this year. They're really good, aren't
they? But my favourite have been the Costoluto Fiorentino.
Oh, really? Okay.
It's that giant, big ribbed monstrosity, which looks, I mean, they look like aliens, some of them, but their flavours are absolutely superb.
I might have to try some of those at some point.
Well, and they are now, they're heaving, those balls. And they're big, that size.
Well, I've had really good success outside, but in the greenhouse, not as much. It's been really weird. So my San Marzano in the greenhouses, I've had a bit of a problem with, lost some Emerald with a couple of them, which is more than likely my fault. So I've lost a few for that. But the other ones, I've got some massive ones in the greenhouse at the front of the house that's normally heated, in the spring at least. And they're massive San Marzano tomatoes, but they're not ripening.
Well, they won't ripen at the moment.
It'll take ages.
But they will do.
Will eventually. I'll get there. And to be fair, they'll ripen well into even November, potentially, if I take them off the vine.
So I did about six varieties.
Yeah.
And I did some red cherry. They're just called red cherry. And they're all right. They're not too bad. They got all right flavour. I did a yellow one called, and I can't remember the name of it. It's called something like Yellow Sunrise.
Yeah.
And they are bigger. Mm. And I actually prefer them to the Sun Gold because they've got a nicer depth of flavour, I think. I quite like those. But my favourite have been, like I say, those Italian ones. And then I grew another one, which was a French heritage variety called Saint-Pierre.
Have
you ever seen them?
Don't think so.
Are gigantic.
Yeah.
And they are delicious.
Yeah.
And apparently they're like a really old heritage variety.
Yeah.
But they've been very productive. Yeah. So I can say that they're worth giving it a go. I also done Cocktail Crush and Mountain Magic because you gave me some. I've only got about five or six San Marzano plants.
Yeah.
But they've all done really well in the polytunnel, just attached to the floor. They're grown up a cane. They're just tied in with canes. But what I have done this year is manage them way better.
Yeah.
Constant side shooting.
A lot of care.
Constant. Tying in, and like I say, having a much more sort of consistent level of watering, and the soil that we used, which was just again straight manure, put another load of manure in that end of the tunnel. That's it.
Mm.
I've not fed them once, mate. I've not used any feed at all. Not even like proprietary liquid feed or what have you.
No.
Not done any of it.
No.
And so it goes to show that if the soil is right, it doesn't need to be, you don't need to be constantly feeding all the time.
No.
And I'm not saying that, I might not have had slightly better result, but I mean, honestly, when you come and have a look, I hope you come up in a week or next week, they are heaving with tomatoes.
Yeah.
And likewise, I'm growing a lot of things in that hot tunnel, which like might like us, the shelter and the higher temperature, but definitely don't all like the same conditions.
Yeah.
So at one end of the tunnel, I've got Rocket that must have been in there for 3 months and it's still going like flowers. You just cut the flowers off and just eat the leaves. It's brilliant.
Wow.
And it's that thin veined one, the thin leafed one. So it's not the big lush, and it seems to be able to deal much better with the kind of like heat and then the cooler weather. And you just cut it like grass, mate. It just keeps coming. It's been there. It's not bolted or anything.
No.
It keeps drying.
Yeah.
But the flavour's good and it's absolutely superb.
Yeah.
There's six courgette plants in there that I put in early.
Yeah.
And obviously they're doing really well.
Yeah.
The ones outside are just giving now as well.
Yeah.
The garlic was great in there. There's sweet peppers and they're being very productive. I wish I had more. They're the ones I had a lot of trouble with, the germination.
Yeah.
And then I've got chilies in there, Hungarian hot wax, and they are, I mean, there must be 20 chilies on each one. I mean, but they're those great big long.
Yeah.
So they're not overpoweringly hot.
Yeah.
So whereas before, you know, it's always a bit Russian roulette, isn't it? Do I put in a whole chili or two chilies? I mean, I'm just putting a big one of those in, and there's not actually any overpowering heat, but there's that really nice depth of warmth. So I'm using those, and I think that they're the kind that you would use to pickle, wouldn't you? You'd have them whole.
Yeah.
They're like what you have on your kebab, aren't they?
Or
those
sliced,
big long ones, yeah.
Yeah, the whole, for me, they're just nice.
Yeah. And then I probably did, I'm just trying to think, probably 35 to 40 aubergine plants in there. And each of those is really, maybe there's probably six or seven aubergines on each one.
Yeah.
And there's a variety called Long Purple, and they are lovely. And I've not, I've never been a aubergine eater. Because, you know, I'd had them on holiday, and I don't think they always look that great when you buy them, because they don't, they're not that shelf stable, are they?
I think it's also very easy to cook them badly.
Yeah.
I really do. I think it's really easy to cook them in a way that makes them a bit rubbery and not taste of anything very much. And I think it, you know, it takes someone that knows what they're doing with them to make it.
Well, I asked
tasty, if you like,
because I don't know how to cook them. I've had them in a moussaka. That's it, right?
Yeah.
So we're watching two fellas out here kite surfing,
yeah,
and they're pretty good at it. I have to say,
they're upright.
Oh, well, I think that you should take a photo of them two, and we can pretend that's me and you.
I don't think anyone's getting anyone who knows us.
We've learned a new skill. Oh, that's
it. I think we've blown it, mate, already, because we said we did a bit of fishing.
Could have been us.
We could have pretended, though, couldn't we?
Could have been us, boss. I've asked a friend, who told me about baba ganoush.
Oh. Yeah, I made that.
No, I've not made that yet.
Oh, it's
lovely. Then she told me the best way to cook them is literally to quarter them, salt and pepper them, put some olive oil on them, and put them under the grill or in an oven, and just have them really plain, and then just get the actual flavour of aubergine. So I've been doing that. And then the other thing I've been doing with them is putting them into my slow cooker and having them as part of a big vegetable chili, like what I've been doing, I was telling you all about. So I've enjoyed that.
Baba ganoush is the best way to use them, mate.
Yeah, I've heard this.
That is magnificent.
Yeah. So that will come along. And I've got plenty, mate. Plenty of them. Obviously, we're providing a bit of stuff for retail now as well. So we have got, you know, there's some veg boxes going out, and there's a shop open and things like that. And it is nice to see that, you know, starting to tick up. I don't claim to be any expert at the retail side of things. I'm definitely trying to be more on the providing for the shop side of things.
Well, someone's got to pay your wages, mate, haven't they? You know, you've got
to absolutely. And it's nice to be able to, it's nice to be able to chat to people about what they would like as well. And I know that will, you know, there will be an element of catering for what people want to buy and stuff like that, but. You know, the carrots that we've been getting up and are still getting out have been absolutely superb.
What I liked about it, and I've only been up there once, but what I liked was that when you had labelled the vegetables, it wasn't carrots. It was Chantenay Redcor carrots.
Yeah.
And I think that's a really important...
Well, I'm trying to have this conversation with people all the time.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if someone comes to me and says, oh, I really like French beans, then you can say, well, have you tried these French beans?
Yeah.
Because... there is a difference, and and we do it on some crops. People know that they like Pink Lady apples or Golden Delicious or whatever.
Or they prefer Maris Piper for roasting potatoes.
Yeah, I think that's there. I think some people know about potatoes. Yeah. I wouldn't say no more. But I don't think that there should be any difference with people who could try and develop some better knowledge of and some understanding about carrots being different. And I think the reason that they don't is because most carrots don't taste different. They're all a bit, they can be very bland, the ones that you buy in the shops.
I'm going to give a shout out to my cousin Trevor, who was over here. He's from Canada, and him and his family have been over for a while, and I think we were having a conversation, and it went along the lines of we're eating carrots, and I don't much like carrots, until you then realise that what you're eating doesn't taste like carrots are supposed to taste.
No.
What you're buying in the shop don't taste like carrots are supposed to taste. And that's the bottom line. And I'm pretty sure that was a conversation that we had on one of our long drives somewhere.
Well, people have been coming into the shop and stuff, and They want to see where things have grown, so we take them, show them it, and then, you know, I can dig up an Autumn King, an early Nant, and a Chantenay Red Court, and talk about why they're different and what you might want to use them for.
Yeah,
I've got to say, mate, those Chantenay Red Courts, I've been eating this. and I think that formerly I would have poo-pooed them because they're not as big.
Yeah.
And I'd have gone, well, what's the point of growing a carrot, which is, you know, this size, when you can grow a carrot in the same space, which is this size?
Yeah.
But they're totally different.
But it's also, that's a difference of your circumstances now, isn't it? Whereas for me, I'm better off growing the things where I can get a bigger carrot for the space that I've got, because I've got limited space.
Yeah, to be honest with you, though, they make up for it because they've got some girth on them, those Chantenay Red Court. They get really big at the top, that. And like, I've had a couple like this.
Oh, really?
They're only that long.
Yeah.
And they make that real triangular shape.
Yeah.
And I think that for a bit like the Sun Golds, early Nant carrots taste so good.
Mm.
And they're really profuse.
Yeah.
And they've got a good hit of sweet carrot flavour.
Yeah.
And they are fabulous. They're probably still my favourite carrot to cook with.
Yeah.
Because when you cook them, if you're not such a, you know, I'm probably not a great cook, but you can get away with probably a slight bit of overcooking or whatever, because the depth of flavour is there.
Yeah.
And the sweetness is certainly there. They come into their own in that slow cooker because everything is sweet.
Of course,
It's like literally, it's probably a bit too much sometimes. Yeah. But the Chantenay Red Court, I've really enjoyed cooking them because they're texturally, they're different.
Mm-hmm.
They don't go kind of just soft and insipid. They're more robust.
Right.
They've certainly got less of a water content in the actual carrot.
Yeah.
So they're a kind of firmer bite. And I think they're really lovely colours. And every now and then they throw up different, you know, you get a white one and a red one come up. I haven't seen much of a red core in my Chantenay Red Core.
Yeah, okay.
But it might be that I've got Chantenay, which are a different variety of Chantenay Red Court. I'm pretty sure they were Chantenay Red Court. But they are lovely. Yeah. Really, really good. And then, of course, the Autumn King, I haven't harvested yet.
Yeah.
And they're the ones which grow like a long stump, a long cylindrical root.
Yeah.
And they're very good for keeping. You know, they will stay in the soil, really.
Yeah.
But I did a carrot sowing this today.
Yeah. I did some yesterday, actually.
I did 10,000.
I didn't do 10,000. I did about 50.
I did twenty rows.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, they're probably a bit oversown, but they are early Nant though. So again, going back to your early varieties later in the year, and that's something that, you know, for a lot of people out there, if you're trying to hit some late crops in the year, think back to that time where you were trying to get the early crops going.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not surprising, is it, is that you sow spring onions.
Yeah.
And you sow Amsterdam forcing or early Nant, or sugar snacks is another one that they grow.
So the early Nant you've planted, are they for early next year?
No, I'm hoping that they'll do all right. What I'm hoping for is a warm September.
Yeah.
Right? Because then if they get that early kick on,
yeah,
there's no reason why, you know, there'll be enough light. They take about 12 to 14 weeks.
Well, okay. So yeah, theoretically it's still possible then to get
by the end of October, if it's reasonable.
Yeah.
We should be able, but I don't need them to be enormous.
No.
I just need them to be worth it.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
You know, so if they're only little finger size and you're getting a whole bunch.
You're getting 10,000 of them.
And you're putting them straight into the stews.
Yeah.
There's no problem, is there? Whatsoever.
Well, so I had some
because I've already got the Autumn King.
Yeah.
But they're in. Yeah. They're done. And I've actually got, I've got about 5 or 6 rows left in the tunnel.
Yeah.
I've got 20 rows outside.
Okay.
Which are early Nant and Autumn King as well. And they've struggled to get going this last 5 or 6 weeks. But if I get a good next month, they'll be fine.
Yeah.
But I want to get them in this year because I lost a lot in the field last year. Do you remember they rotted out?
Yeah, that's right. So my early Nant are doing okay. I finally got some to go. I've struggled to get them to germinate, to be fair, at the allotment, but I've got a good crop now coming. But I was like, well, I've got some space. So I put some Paris Market in yesterday.
Just 2 little rows. I like them.
I just had the seeds. I was like, there's no harm in just sowing these.
I like them. I think you have to thin them out really well.
Well, I literally had about 50 seeds. I had two rows, so
50 just carrots.
Really thin.
Mate, I don't even know what that looks like.
Well, I know you wouldn't.
I sneezed them out.
I know.
I reckon my hands are so gnarly, mate. I could lose 50 carrot seeds in the creek.
I literally put in those like a quarter of a teaspoon of carrots in my hand, and I was like, well, I'm just going to sprinkle those down these two rows. And try and do it as thin as possible because I'm terrible for oversowing.
Yeah, me too.
Do you remember carrots. I did that 2000 or whatever it was in one row? Yeah. It's so ridiculous.
Well, I know that I oversow carrots and I don't hardly do any thinning out.
No.
And I probably put up with slightly less girth on the size of the carrots, but it's so much easier to do it. And so, I have got better at sowing thinly. So the carrot sowings have been going on, and I did sow some dwarf French beans last week. I spent a whole day sowing last week. Lots more brassicas, Chinese greens, bok choy, coriander, more carrots. Not winter Lisbon, but the last of my normal spring onions.
Yeah.
I did some Welsh onions. I can't even remember all the things I've sowed. But there'll be one more lot, one more big day of sowing, really, for the stuff which is kind of oriental greens and things
like that.
Still
quite a bit you can sow. We've got a question about that later on, so I won't dwell on it too long. There is still quite a bit you could be sowing now. We'll come back to it, perhaps in the second half, if that's all right with you. But certainly I've been sowing as well, and I'd like to sow a bit more, but I've run out of compost for the time being. I've got to get down to the shop and get some more, or sow direct, but that's been a disaster this year, so I perhaps won't bother doing that. So I've had, what am I trying to think of? Tomatoes have been good. Sweet corn's just come in now.
Yeah,
starting so to get. I could have picked some.
Yeah, I could pick some today. Yeah. My sweet corn though is probably 2/3 the size of last year.
Tiny.
Everyone's had the same, haven't they?
Yeah.
Good size cobs though.
Yeah, I've got some decent cobs.
It never really did it reach the sky like it. I mean, last year was just crazy, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. I've had some broccoli, green, like summer sprouting, green, not Calabrese, but summer sprouting broccoli I've had.
Okay, and I've got Calabrese just coming, but only because it was pot bound and it's thought I better get up now, otherwise it's going to be the end of it.
Yeah.
But I mean, I won't have enough to run through the shop, and I've probably got 40 purple sprouting plants, which sounds loads, and it will be, it will make a lot, but I could eat that on my own probably.
I don't know. I
love PSP.
I had 27 in the spring. Do you remember?
Yeah, that was enough, wasn't it?
It's ridiculous amounts.
Yeah.
Ridiculous.
Just so it'll be okay.
You can't store it. It doesn't keep. So.
Chard is a good one to be sowing now. So what else are we harvesting? Not harvesting, but what has been nice to see is that, you know, the crops I'd sowed outside and the crops I'd planted outside, they took a long time to get going. Because it had been so wet and damp and cold.
It was so hot. It was too hot. And then it was too cold. And then it was too wet.
Yeah.
It's just, yeah.
But now the summer squash have all knitted up.
Yeah.
And I've got that kind of light.
I was still planting them out a month ago.
Yeah.
They were in pots when they were quite big. But I was still planting them out a month ago.
Yeah.
And they're coming really good now, actually, I have to say.
Yeah. We really need there to be a good warm September.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I'm going to just let them go now and see what I get at the end of the season. So they're doing all right.
Yeah, I've done the same just to take up some
my
space.
My first onions are out.
Yep.
My main crops, they're coming out.
Any good? Because mine are tiny.
Yeah, mine are fine.
Yeah, yeah.
But I grew from seed and they were in probably a lot earlier than yours.
Yeah, I multi-sowed from seed. And
I've multi-sown as well. But remember that it takes them ages and then all of a sudden they really swell up.
Yeah, no, they did that, but they've only swelled up to... Oh, not much more. Well, a bit more than golf ball size, probably.
Right,
not much more than that. So, sort of pickling onions, really. Most of them. There's a few that are a bit bigger, but mostly that sort of size.
Yeah, they're not as good. They're not as good as they were last year.
No.
But then maybe the soil wasn't. No. But the one that I've had a lot of success with is called Long Red.
Okay.
Which is a torpedo-shaped Italian tomato.
Okay.
And they look really good.
Okay.
And we're eating them already.
Yeah.
And the thing about them is because of their shape, you can actually twist them out and pull them out individually.
Okay. All right.
So rather than dig a whole clump up of multi-sown, which sometimes you have to do, because of the nature of them, they're like a big chunky spring onion, but they're like that.
Okay, another one. So almost look like shallots, don't they?
They're another called long red, and yeah. they're delicious.
Yeah. I might have to get you to come and sit and look through my seed catalogue with me again at some point, because trying to get the right varieties, and I know already I've got a problem next year because I've got the seed catalogue in already, and the Mountain Magic crop has failed this year.
Right.
So they're not selling any seed.
Okay.
So I'm going to have to either source it elsewhere, which will obviously cost an awful lot more, or do something different next year.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, they're quite open about it. I get the King's catalogue and it's like, crop failed, you know. Or we're replacing this one with this variety for whatever reason.
You can get them from other source, though.
Oh, of course, but it will cost me like three times as much.
Yeah, but then if you know you're going to get a crop, they're an F1 variety.
F1 variety, yeah. But they are, I mean, they come into their own, because like I said, I've had 30 kilo. I just made 29 jars of passata today.
Lovely.
Mostly from the Mountain Magics, because I knew that they're reliable.
Yeah, and that's what you want in it, isn't it? Like you were saying. So I know that if I had the capacity and the storage space, I would have a real go. But I will be doing some dehydrating this week.
Yeah.
I'll be slicing and doing the tomatoes through the dehydrator, because that proved very popular and very shelf stable. I'm still eating them now.
Yeah.
From last year.
Yeah, it doesn't surprise me.
Those sun-dried tomatoes. Yeah. Well, they were just air-dried tomatoes, really. And they've been absolutely wonderful. And they've kept well just in clip-top jars.
Yeah.
Absolutely great.
Yeah.
I'd like to be better at using them the other end.
Hmm.
Because I don't particularly just like them just straight out of the jar. My wife loves them like that.
Yeah. They're a bit chewy, aren't they?
They are, and that's not my sort of snack. No. But if I knew that I could put 20 of them into a stew...
Or rehydrate some and put them in a salad, or...
Yeah, it's about learning to use them the other end, isn't it?
Yeah.
I could see what I would use them for. I could see that I would chop them up with some really good ham or something and run them through pasta. I can see that, but you know, I'd like to have a better way of dealing with them at the other end, but at the moment it's just been nice not to waste anything.
Well, I've been doing quite a bit of preserving, because obviously getting all this crop,
yeah,
I haven't had much I've literally had 5 weeks where I've hardly been to the allotment,
yeah,
other than just to harvest occasionally and do a few little bits, but not for any length of time.
Yeah,
so the last few days just been able to get getting the crop in and preserving. So I did some beetroot. I don't know if I said to you before about this. I did some pickled beetroot.
Lovely.
And I did some beetroot relish as well.
Oh, nice.
So I'm looking forward to cracking that out.
I'd like that recipe.
Yeah.
People have been making the old bread and butter pickle, haven't they?
I've been making that as well. But I made mine, what really interesting, I made mine with red onions instead of brown ones.
Yeah, nice.
And it's got this kind of pinkish hue.
Oh, yeah, I bet.
It's really pretty, actually.
I cannot say, I know people talk, I cannot tell you how good that recipe is.
It's so good. I'll tell you what I did as well. I did it. I didn't even do it with my own courgettes.
Somebody put that box up.
Do you know those Trombocino?
Yeah.
Somebody put one of those out and it's massive.
They thought, I'm having that.
And I was like, I'll have one of those. And you know, like the recipe calls for like 2 pounds of courgette, doesn't it?
It was
whatever.
One.
It wasn't even a whole one. It wasn't even a whole one. It's massive, this thing.
One thing I would like to say about that recipe, because I've been caught out myself, when you've got all the vegetables, and then you look at the paltry amount of vinegar, you think that's never going to fill all them jars up. It does. It works exactly right.
I find it doesn't.
You have to ram the stuff in the jar, Alan, right?
Yeah.
Really ram it in and then pour it on. And then it's like, oh no, there is actually enough.
No, I've always had to add a bit more vinegar when I've done it, but maybe I'm doing it wrong. I don't know.
Well,
it comes out all right either way.
Oh, such a good, easy thing. Yeah. I have made it with malt vinegar, but it's not as nice, nowhere near as nice. No. I think you do need the wine or the cider vinegar.
I've done cider vinegar this year, because it's what I had.
Yeah, I think either of those will be fine, but it's because you're adding the sugar, it's got the sweetness to it, but malt vinegar can be a bit overpowering in my opinion, so it is worth sourcing your cheapest kind of source of wine vinegar, and it's just annoying, because when you go to France, it literally is pence.
Yeah,
because obviously it's such a big wine growing country.
Yeah, I recommend buying it by the gallon.
Yeah,
because when you go and buy those 350 milliliter bottles in the shop, I mean, it's a waste of time.
Yeah, it can be a lot of money, can't they? So
you can buy a gallon for not all that much, really.
No, it's not too bad.
It keeps somewhere between 10 and 15 quid, depending on what it is you're getting, and it keeps forever, pretty much.
Yeah.
So it's not like you're gonna. It's going to go off if you don't use it or anything like that. So
Well, you could buy it with a friend, mate.
Well, yeah, especially if you're doing a lot of preserving.
We'll be talking about that, though, yeah,
all right, we'll have a chat about that. and the other thing I've done is I've done my elderberry syrup for the year.
Wow.
That was good. That was...
My fruit's been very poor this year, mate.
Yeah.
Hardly any fruit, you know.
Yeah.
I'm just hoping that we can make some cider.
Yeah.
And I think that what, you know, if I can find some wild apple trees to do my jelly and and getting Bramleys for puddings and pies and that's what I really miss. Well, but I
found a wild crab apple.
That's good.
Not far from mine, and an apple tree actually as well.
Oh, that's really good.
Not
well,
far from mine.
My gorilla planted trees have been okay.
Good.
I've got a discovery, and then the one that I thought had been eaten, that's been okay. So
yeah,
that's all right. But I'm in the off year of the we have crab apples where I live, but they go biannually.
Oh, okay.
And I'm good definitely year, bad year, yeah it? I'm definitely yeah. in the bad year.
Okay, so my one in my garden's having a bad year, but this one that I found is having a really good year, which is why I found it.
Oh right, well, there you go.
So
spot on.
So I'm gonna go and I'll go and get a few of those because I do like a bit of crab apple jelly.
Mate, isn't crab apple jelly the greatest thing?
What I like about it is its versatility.
Oh, it just gets used in sausage sandwiches in my right, house.
But no. Okay. So it works as a substitute for applesauce.
Yeah.
It works as a substitute for cranberry sauce.
It's nice on toast, mate.
It's nice on toast.
It's really good on toast.
I reckon it'd be nice in scones. Mm. You can put it in your gravy to flavour your gravy. You can have it with a bit of cheese.
Yeah.
It's so versatile. It's ridiculous. Really, and I just really pull it out, you know, like people around for roast dinner or whatever, rather than making an apple sauce.
Yeah, totally.
Pull out the crab apple jelly. Rather than making or getting a cranberry sauce, pull out the crab apple jelly.
Totally.
Because it just does the job. It's amazing stuff. I recommend it very highly to people. If you've got crab apples anywhere nearby, get on it.
It's just a beautiful looking thing as well, isn't it? And it's got that depth of flavour. And it always makes me wonder why we, you know, we're in the UK, we probably eat more varieties of jam and preserve than anywhere else in the world. But we don't, you can't go in a shop and buy apple jam.
No.
It's bonkers, isn't it?
Yeah,
we seem to use apples as an accompaniment to savoury things, don't we? Whereas, you know, every other fruit, and even some things which ain't even that sweet or got any much place in fruit, we use them to make jam and jelly, but not apples. And that's the thing that probably grows the most consistently.
Well, you're more like to put an apple in a chutney than you are to make a jam out of it, aren't you?
Yeah, that's what I mean. And have it with cheese or a pork pie or something.
Yeah.
Whereas in any other part of the world, probably it'd be like, that's your most productive fruit. Why don't you make jam out of it?
Yeah.
One of the things I haven't made for many years is something called cheese, which is a very old English preserve.
Mm.
And it's basically a jelly, but you push it through the sieve.
Right, okay.
So you boil up your fruit. Mm. Let's say you're making a jam.
Mm.
And what you do is, to make a traditional jelly, you mustn't push it through the sieve because it goes cloudy.
Clouds is the juice, doesn't it?
Whereas with a cheese, you really do push it through.
Oh, really?
So you're almost pushing, but it's still smooth because it's going through a jelly bag or something like that, and you really squeeze it out. Yeah. And you get every bit out of it, and of course you get more pectin out of it, so it goes a bit more solid, right?
Okay.
But also you get better flavour. It just hasn't got the aesthetic.
Yeah.
Because it's not clear and crystal clear. And, oh, mate, that is absolutely a superb thing to have.
So it's apple cheese. Because I've heard of apple cheese before, right? So it's like a jelly, but it's cloudy then, and a bit more.
It's definitely got a different texture and a mouthfeel. Because it's not grainy, but it's got, it's more solid.
Yeah, okay. Right.
But I think rather than a straight apple cheese, I think you're more likely to get a mixed fruit cheese where everything, all the blackberries go in it, all the black currants go in it, the odd apple bits of pears and everything.
Right.
And you just boil it up.
Yeah.
So, because you cook it probably a bit longer to make it go softer, so it'll go through the sieve.
All right.
So, I have made it before, though.
I have to have a go at that.
And it was really lovely, mate.
Yeah.
Much more flavourful.
Yeah.
Because obviously you're extracting more flavour. Yeah. And of course, lends itself as well to adding a bit of cinnamon, adding a little bit of, something. You know, maybe mixed spice or nutmeg or ginger, perhaps, because then you can get into that. But it's still something that you would spread.
Yeah. Okay.
So, give it a try.
I might have to try that.
I think it could be good, and I expect you could still stir it into a a cup of hot water and it would make some form of tea or kind of like sweet cordial when you've got a cold. Especially if it's spiced, it'd be quite nice, wouldn't it?
I'm definitely in preserve mode, so that is... if I can preserve it right now, I am. So I'm freezing and all that, and that sounds
apple cheese. It's probably a very old-fashioned thing.
Oh, I'm sure it is. I've heard of it before, and
but let's be honest, mate. If I like it, it's old-fashioned.
Quite like you, Al. I've been accused of that before. I'm not sure it's necessarily that true, but I had the pressure canner out today as well as the water bath canner, which that was a new one on me. I was obviously trying to get the passata done, and I wanted to get it done as quick as possible.
Yeah.
And I've actually got two water bath canner like pots. I was like, but the pressure canner's bigger. Mm. I was looking through the pressure canner instructions booklet, and it's like, when you're doing tomatoes, you can do it in the water bath like this, or you can do it as a pressure canner. So I both gone at the same time at one point today.
That's ideal.
Yeah, well, it got them done really quick because my water bath canner only takes 7 jars at a time.
Right.
And so it can take a really long time just to get it through the water bath. So to actually have the pressure canner on the go at the same time really, really sped that up. That was one of the things I wanted to do this year. So I'm now looking at recipes that I can do with meat. I want to make a stew or something like that. And then put it in a jar.
Just shelf stable. That for me, it would always be about the tomatoes. But I don't have enough personally to do that. You know, obviously I've got a lot going through where we are. But I do find myself eating more seasonally. And I know that you've got a much stronger Mediterranean climate recipe or kind of
palette
than I have. And I know that I resort back to a bit of team taters, don't I?
Yeah.
As the year goes on.
Yeah.
But I love this time of year when tomatoes are glutting and they're fresh.
Yeah.
And it is about making, you know, lasagna. A good lasagna, scratch made, is something to behold.
Yeah.
In it.
Yeah.
Whether it's
everyone
got meat,
likes it, don't they?
Whether it's got meat or just vegetables in it. And similarly, you know, a really good ratatouille or anything like that. You know, really celebrating the tomatoes for what they are, and really just going for it. And I never used to eat a lot of tomatoes as a child. Didn't like them at all, really. No. Whereas now, you know, I found more ways that I do like them. And you know, if you get a good those Cosoluta Fiorentinas, mate, or one of those really big tomatoes, a whole slice of that in a burger is something just in it.
But it comes back to that comment about not knowing what they taste like. Like, if you grew up eating tomatoes from the supermarket, you don't know what tomatoes taste like. Even the best ones don't taste like tomatoes. They don't. It's just how it is. And until you've grown some or, you know, gone to somewhere like your place where you're selling them and eating those ones, you've not yet eaten what a tomato ought to taste like. You know what I think about them. They're magnificent. They're my favourite.
I know they're your fave. They're not my fave, but I do appreciate them, and I certainly like to really celebrate them. And even making a simple salad where you have 3 or 4 varieties of tomato laid out on your lettuce or rocket and onions and cucumbers. Oh, mate.
Even just a few different varieties of tomato chopped up with a bit of finely sliced red onion and some balsamic vinegar.
It's like, pretty good going.
Just mix it up and then let it sit for an hour before you eat it. You're going to struggle to beat that. No, you are. It's just so good and really simple, really tasty.
I might have to make pizza now.
Well, that's what the passata's for, mostly.
Yeah, I know, but I quite like slices of tomato on my pizza with mozzarella.
Yeah, I'd have that as well. And so a little bit of salami, and I might even fold it and make calzone.
Oh, no, I don't like a calzone. Oh. I like my cheese bubbling and all brown. But I definitely could get into expanding my tomato cooking knowledge. So it'll be interesting to... Or just celebrating them fresh, you know.
Well, I like to do that. And what I like about the passata is that they hold that freshness. Once you've made it, it holds that freshness for a really good long time. And you get that kind of tangy tomatoiness. And you can have that tangy tomatoiness
in the winter,
even when there's no fresh tomatoes around. And obviously now what I'll do is I'll sit that on the shelf and I won't use it until the tomatoes are done.
Yeah.
And I'll use the fresh tomatoes until they're done. But once they're done, then I can start to use the passata. And that way, hopefully, it will last me the year as well. But I'd like to do one more batch like that if I can. If I could get 50 to 60 jars on the shelf.
Yeah, we use probably 1 or 2 jars of tomato a week.
Yeah.
when it's not fresh. And yeah. So, you know, I'd need a system like yours, really. And I haven't got anywhere to store 50 jars of passata at the moment, which is a shame, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, but we'll get there.
Yeah. We'll get there. Well, I have made a big decision, though, which is that next year one of my greenhouses is not going to have tomatoes in it.
Okay.
Because what I've found this year is that I haven't got anywhere to germinate seeds anymore.
Okay.
And because I can't reliably do it at the allotment, I'll just lose too much.
Yeah.
I need somewhere where I can, just as a nursery, really.
A plastic powerhouse, mate.
Well, I need something. And it's whether I put something up at the allotment, but that just means I've got to go every day to make sure it's...
Yeah, that's not going
to
happen.
That's not viable. So it probably needs to be at home. So I think probably next year I'm going to forego one of the greenhouses of San Marzano. And that means, in favour of being able to then raise plug plants to plant out as gaps appear.
Yeah.
Because one of the things I have experienced, obviously, with not being up the allotment as much, is that I still have got a lot of space that is or should be empty. So right. Like my main crop tomatoes are still in the ground. They could be out by now without any, you know, like could have been out a while ago.
Really?
Yeah.
Are they finished?
All the leaves are all, they've all died back. They're just little brown tomatoes, brown onions sitting in the ground now.
Because of the blight?
No, onions.
I thought you said tomatoes. I misspoke.
Little brown onions sat in the ground. They're all done. They're done. And they could have been out some time ago.
Right.
So that space could be clear. There's spaces also that's cleared that where I had lettuce in early in the summer or whatever it was. And if I had a nursery space, I could have raised those plants as plugs to put out.
Yeah, you could have had.
And I could have plugged them as they fell empty.
Right.
So, for the sake of
succession, has not been quite as it could be.
No, and that
same as mine.
But part of that has been the season.
Yeah.
Part of it has been some failures or losses. Part of it has just been me being busy at a bad time.
Mm.
Part of it is the space isn't there for me to grow to raise those things in plugs like I normally would. So it's a whole mixture of different reasons. But I can just take a bit more control of it by saying I'm going to keep one of the greenhouses for specifically growing plug plants to plug spaces as they come free. And then I can raise brassicas at home because I've raised some kale at home, but it's got battered.
What, indoors?
No, outdoors.
What do you do in your greenhouses in the winter?
Not a lot at the moment.
So I think that could be a focus for you.
Yeah.
Because if you've got, how many greenhouses have you got?
Two. They're 7 foot by 5 foot, each of them.
So if you could think about what you could raise in them. And I'm not saying it'd be worth you putting in cabbages, but you could put in.
Yeah.
You could put in some greens or some brassicas or
well,
something.
Well, that'll go outside, you see. That works pretty well at the allotment outside. It's things like winter lettuces, that kind of thing, maybe.
Things like a could lot of potentially lettuce in the crop. Winter.
Sometimes, yeah.
Yeah, we don't eat a lot. I don't eat a lot.
I like a salad like all year round, pretty much.
Right. Well, then I would definitely expound some of the. And you can just about sow that now if you do it right.
Yeah.
There's one called All Year Round.
Yeah.
There's winter density which is pretty good. That Marvel of the Four Seasons is pretty good. Grenoble Red is pretty good.
Yeah.
I would definitely have a look at that.
Yeah.
I'm trying a little raft of new lettuces I've never tried before.
Mm.
And there's a couple of winter ones in there. I can't remember all the names, but I've tried one called Crisp Mint.
Okay.
Which is supposed to have a, funnily enough,
a minty flavour. Yeah. All right, okay. All right.
I don't know what it was going to be like.
Yeah.
Made good raifa though, wouldn't it?
Oh, you would do, yeah. No, something like that, yeah. I have to say, for some of the things I like to eat, that would probably go quite well.
Yeah. So anyway, so I've done a whole raft of those sowings. So it'd be worth seeing what comes out of there. You can do all of your bok choy and your pak choy and your dims, what's the name? Chop suey greens and things like that.
Yeah, yeah.
There's all of those which are supposed to do very well. And kale does well inside.
Part of the problem I have is that the tomatoes will now be in there until at least November.
Right.
They'll be in the way and they'll be big. So they're going to shade anything out. That's part of the issue. So I suppose.
It's too late, maybe.
Yeah. I suppose feasibly next year, what I could do is raise plugs in till about now and then plant it up for the winter.
Well, no, your tomatoes will still be in there.
No, but if I had one that didn't have tomatoes next year. Yeah, yeah. Because at the moment, I've got, they've both got. Each of them's got 8 tomatoes in and 2 cucumbers. And so the roof is now, everything's reached up to the roof.
You could probably grow some Clatonia, right? Which if no one's grown it, it is worth growing.
Yep.
And you could probably grow some lamb's lettuce, right?
Yep.
You could sow it now and that it's not very fast growing. So, you know, if you can hold it in pots and then put it into trays or pots that you're tomatoes even come out of. You know, you could literally put it in the top of those, one plant in each one.
Yeah.
And I mean, how many tomatoes have you got in each one?
In each pot, just one plant.
Now, how many pots have you got in there?
Oh, eight in each greenhouse.
Yeah, so I mean, you know, eight lamb's lettuce is actually quite a lot.
Well, the other one, I mean, things like corn salad go really well, and they're really tough, so they go outside as well.
They can go outside, but it's nicer in the middle of winter to go in a greenhouse and pick them.
That's true.
And they will get a bit, they do get a bit, the leaves do get a bit damp.
Yeah.
They go, they rot off a bit.
Whereas in the greenhouse, they won't do that so readily, hopefully.
No, they won't. They won't. I've grown all sorts of things in the greenhouse winter.
In fact, you could potentially have it with the wind, with the ventilation open, which would reduce the risk further, wouldn't it?
Yeah, you just won't water it, mate.
No.
You'll be there going, why am I not? It's really weird growing in a greenhouse in the winter. Because you keep going in there going, right, it's been 5 weeks. It's got to have run out. And it hasn't. Oh, it's still damp and it still doesn't need watering.
Yeah, because of course it recycles
it's
everything.
It's so weird, you know, because you're used to doing it once or twice a day even some days, aren't you?
Yeah.
But, I mean, there's been times where I've gone in and it's still, you know, like January.
Yeah.
And it's still absolutely fine. And that's in that unheated plastic greenhouse. So I'm sure if I can do it in there, you can.
Yeah, yeah.
And I did try Charles Dowd in using the mushroom trays.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say you'd get better results if you use the green crates.
Yeah.
They don't have to be the deep ones. But I think if you just mixed, you know, animal manure and topsoil, you'll get great results all winter. You won't have to feed them or anything, mate.
I had some cracking Oloroso out of a mushroom tray
this year. Yeah, but you could grow, you can grow kale for picking leaves off rather than let it get massive.
Yeah.
You can grow that, you can grow all those oriental greens. You could put Clatonia in there. You could probably put coriander in there and chervil.
Mm.
I'd say that you'd get all of those through.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you could go out maybe once a week and pick a big bowl of salad off.
Yeah.
That'd be eight nice. Trays. Well, it's like money for nothing, though, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's the sort of thing I need to be doing, absolutely. But let's, I think we've almost started to cross over into the next thing, so let's take a break there.
Yeah.
Let's come back, because we had some questions I'd like to try and get to.
Okay, mate.
And we'll talk about those, all right? Speak in a second. Okay, so we're back, and we had some questions. I'm just going to try and see if I can get them up while we're still talking here, because I did put out there earlier this evening that we were going to try and meet up today, and asked if anyone had anything in particular they wanted us to talk about, and we did get some responses, actually. So Hannah Southard asked exactly what we were just talking about there, favourite veggie to overwinter, and in fact, we've got another question from one Libby Roderick, who, hello mum, asking the same thing, you know, a bit of ground for winter veg, what's the best thing to be doing?
Ooh.
So I think we've sort of started to cover that a little bit, and I wanted to get onto it before, you know, we've gone too far.
Yeah, go on then.
So I'm looking at, I've been sowing, yeah?
Right.
And I've been sowing with a view to winter. Now, some of my winter veg has been done some time ago.
Yeah.
I'll be honest, like things like my favourite ones, like the purple sprouting and that, which is probably more a spring vegetable, perhaps you could argue.
Yeah.
But things for overwintering, some of them have been done already. It's too late, yeah?
It is definitely too late for a lot of things. But
it's not for some, is it?
No, it's not. And you can sort of, you can make do.
Mm.
You know, if there are certain, like we were discussing, that there are some brassicas, it's too late to sow now. But it doesn't mean you couldn't still be sowing for some other kinds of brassicas that... Yeah, you might not get the variety that you want, but you could certainly still fill your beds up if you've got spare space and things like that.
And also that you wouldn't necessarily take a plant to full maturity, but you might still get enough to pick from it to make it worthwhile.
Yeah, yeah. And there are certain things which you can probably squeeze in now, which it will mean that instead of eating them in January, you might be eating them in March. But you can certainly make do with a lot of things now. And so, I would certainly be having making that a real priority over the next fortnight and into sort of the last mid-September, really. You know, there's this next 2 weeks, if you don't get some things done by the middle of September,
it's too late.
Yeah, it is, yeah.
And there is a little window now, isn't there? Probably two, maybe 3 weeks of where you could be sowing quite a bit of stuff.
Yeah, and it would really see you through as well.
Yeah,
it would really see you through.
I think one thing I would say is if you're not going to do that,
Yeah.
And that's one perfectly legitimate way of doing it. Please don't leave your beds uncovered.
Yeah.
Because you're just asking for trouble. Cover them up with something, a thick mulch, a layer of plastic, a layer of cardboard, a bit of carpet, some cover crop, some, you know, green manure, something to stop the weeds from coming up, or you'll regret it in the spring.
Yeah.
But certainly better than doing that would be to grow things, even if you don't necessarily get the full crop that you might get by something earlier in the year.
I absolutely totally agree. And there's a lot, there are, you know, it's a big step up from just sowing for summer gluts to then really starting to read your books or look online for the information that tells you how to push it into year-round growing, you know. And I really think that it's probably the thing that sets people into that next stage of gardening or becoming self-sufficient, is that, you know, it's a lot easier to grow a large amount of food in the summer.
Yes.
And autumn particularly, but trying to make sure, and I'm not saying that you can become self-sufficient in these other times straight away, but certainly being able to be proud of going out and digging the stuff for your Christmas dinner and having something when you look out and everything's dreary and died, and, you know, in your garden or your allotment, if you've got something that you can go and get then, which is green and fresh and vibrant and full of vitamins and minerals, it is such a beautiful thing, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So in terms of sowing, we mentioned some of the salad leaves that you could be sowing now.
It's not too late to do some carrots.
No.
And if you've got an indoor growing space, you could put them in buckets and put them inside even, or you can put them in your greenhouse border. It'll be a bit hit and miss outside.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't tell you that on a seed packet. It says you can sow till the end of August, you know, certain varieties of carrots.
Yeah.
I'd say it's a bit late for beetroot, though. They don't seem to ever do well with this late last sowing, and even indoors. I mean, I've got ones to plant up, but they've been in they're 3 weeks germinated already. So
I would espouse the virtues of beetroot for beet leaves.
For leaves, that's fine.
You get away with that, particularly if you almost like microgreen, oversow it.
Yeah.
And then use the leaves almost as a cut and come again kind of idea.
You will, though, if you sow them now, like literally in the next 10 days, you'll get your turnips. That'll be all right. You know, without shadow, and you can sow some radish or some daikon, big radishes if you want to bulk up some of your stews.
Or the mooli.
Same thing.
That's it, yeah.
There might be more than one variety of mooli. I don't know, big long white things.
Yeah, that's what we're talking about. Daikon, we're talking about the same thing, all right.
But I think there are some some black skinned ones of those as well. I've never grown them, actually. Yeah. They look quite nice. I've never really used them much, but very popular in Oriental cooking.
Yeah. There's a lot of those Oriental greens you can sow.
There's a whole host of greens that you sow now, which are apparently, so they are tricky to grow though, right? So I would be growing them indoors or under net because everything eats them.
Yeah, yeah.
And I mean everything eats them.
Yeah.
So Chinese cabbage.
Yeah.
Bok choy, pak choy.
Yeah.
What was the other one that I've looked? Texel greens.
Yeah, Mizuna.
Mabuna. It's another one.
Another one as well, begins with a T, but I can't remember what it is. Tatsoi.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, chrysanthemum greens I've heard of. I've never grown chrysanthemum greens. Yeah. I've grown those mixed mustard, oriental mustard seeds. They're all nice. They're all good. And they're all good in fresh salads where they tend to have a sort of a mustardy flavour.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the bok choy and the pak choy haven't. They've got that brassicary flavour. Yeah. And they're very good, very quickly cooked.
Yeah.
You know, think about all of those all those stir-fried dishes and sort of steamed pudding, steamed dumpling dishes and things like
just,
that.
Just really shown to the heat and then taken off to eat.
Really good. And they're absolutely rammed with vitamins, aren't they? And they seem to be very luscious.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of growth,
you
know, a lot of leaf growth and, you know, chunky stems and crunchy. Mm. And, you know, you can tell that they're going to be cracking for you.
I think if you've got somewhere warm to germinate, then parsley is not a bad shout now.
Yeah, I'd be doing parsley and I'd be doing coriander now, and I'd be doing what's the other one, chervil, but I'm not a big chervil fan, so it's not something that features highly.
Cavolo Nero you can do now, even though it won't tell you that on the packet.
Yeah, Cavolo Nero is a really good crop, and chard should have sown that by now, but again, I've always had great luck with chard, sowing it really late.
I think one of the things I would say is if you're doing it outside, if you can give any kind of cover over those seeds when you sow them, so those light fittings that I got out of the skip that time,
just
a tiny bit of plastic or
protection,
glass or something, just a little bit, just to keep the warmth under there, because it is cooling off a bit overnight now. And if you can keep that nighttime temperature up, you will get quicker germination, and that will benefit you. That's worth mentioning. Trying to think, the other thing I would say is it's also worth, if you're thinking, I really wanted to do, I don't know, cabbage or whatever, go to your local garden centre. It's not a bad time to be going and buying starter plants.
Yeah, you might be lucky, you might be lucky to get some late ones in. Yeah. And I mean, there are certain things which you certainly will still get now.
Yeah.
But it will be dependent on what kind of things have been sold already, because they'll be getting near the end of bringing in some of those.
But I had a really good, a few years ago, I was doing it at work, and we went to a company called Delftland Organics online.
Yeah.
And they were selling their plug plants on there. And they were absolutely fabulous. We got these red Russian kale.
Yeah, I've grown them this year.
I've got
have
red.
You grown them?
Well, I tried to sow some, but they're one of the things that got batter from being outside. Is the reason I want to bring
it
indoors.
Have some spares. I'll have a look.
But yeah, different types of kale and stuff. Well, you get.
I've done about five types this year.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I normally only ever grow one. I've grown a dwarf curled of cottages.
Yeah. Yeah, I've grown that. It's brilliant. I had that last year.
Red Russian. Yeah. And one other one. What's the other one?
I've got Cavolo
Nero, obviously.
Yeah.
And then. Like some have a curly kale or something. Yeah. I don't know.
So, I mean, that just for something to go out that's green, to go for your dinner, is so good. You can do it nearly all through the winter, pretty much, can't you? Like, just go out and just pick a few leaves, steam them.
Again, very good for you as well.
Yeah,
right,
so good.
So I would definitely be sowing those. You can still sow spring onions, and you can still sow for spring onions and winter spring onions.
Yeah.
You can start sowing your overwintering onion seed now. It's a bit early for set, but it's onion seed.
It's not too far off being able to do garlic.
No, in fact, all broad beans.
In September's a good time to do garlic.
October, probably, for that.
Yeah. Whereas I would do garlic potentially in September, so it's got time to get going.
Yeah, you definitely could do that. So you could definitely be putting those in. I think that if you were lucky enough to find some brassicas, that you might be able to get different varieties, but you'll find now that the seeds that you would be able to sow for cabbages now will all be that kind of loose conical spring cabbage type.
Like greens rather than a cabbage.
Yeah. And they are pretty forgiving,
and
even though they don't ever form a tight head, they don't often get massive, do they?
Yeah,
they get absolutely huge. And if you can, in many ways, it's actually easier to grow them without the pressures of cabbage whites and caterpillars through the winter, and you're going to eat them before they come. So it's actually not, it actually fits in quite well if you've tried to grow cabbages outside and they've got thumped.
Yeah.
Because they're quite hardy, aren't they?
Yeah.
The spring cabbages. It's just that they might get eaten by pigeons, or they might get damp and rot off a bit.
Damping off, it's a bit of a problem. And get a bit of an issue with that, especially if it gets very wet and cold.
Yeah, and then it just sits there.
Grey mould or something.
I would definitely think that it could be something that people could have a go at. It's not a bad first one to do, actually. Mm. And the good thing about them is because of they're not, you know, they don't heart up as much. You just pick a whole one and eat the whole thing in your dinner, and it's done in it. So I would definitely think about maybe having a go at some of those for people.
So long and the short of it is a lot of things.
And there's
still time as well.
There is still time. I mean, like, you know, we're talking about carrot sowings, and I think if you get them in, they, you know, you've got a chance of them coming up.
So if you were
getting going.
So I think one of the questions is what's the best? So if you're going to choose one thing and you want to guarantee you're going to get a good crop out of it.
Indoors or outdoors?
Outdoors.
If I could protect them, I'd put some cabbages in probably. Yeah. I think that you'll get the most out of them, and I think that they are... No, that's not true. I'd put chard in.
Okay.
That's what.
Because you get crop over winter.
See, I put loads of chard in as well.
See, I would do Cavolo Nero, but not for the winter, for the spring.
Yeah.
Because you'd eat that in like May.
Yeah, and I'd put chard in, and you'll be eating it before Christmas and then after.
Yeah.
And you'll get leaf vegetables and you'll get those stems as well.
Yeah, okay.
I think it's such a good crop that it chard. Yeah. It's so good. And you can have the rain, different colours going on. It all tastes a bit the same, but, you know, it is a cracker. It's a cracker of a crop, isn't it? You know,
it does look good.
I'd be doing that.
All right. Okay, so that's a good shout. So we did have another question. We had a couple of other questions. One of them was about Christmas. We'll park that one.
Yeah, we'll wait for
that. That's from Hannah as well. So we'll park that one. We'll give that a couple of months maybe before we start looking at it. But we'll definitely do something about Christmas gifts at some point. I've got another one here from someone called Bob, who says he'd like to know when Mike is planning on collecting his shed from his driveway. But he also then goes on to say it's probably not that interesting for everybody else. So perhaps we won't ask you to answer that one, Mike. Hello, Bob.
Definitely this week. Mate, you landed me right in it.
Yeah, sorry, mate. I was going to.
That's going to be the new shed of dreams, that is, mate.
Well, I'm looking forward to seeing that. And actually, I did mention to you earlier, my arrangement in the garage is starting to come together. So we have got to at some point get together and have a look at that if you've got a spare minute somewhere along the way. Because that is, well, I want to get that sorted out now.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Everyone needs that, mate.
Well, at least get it tidied up so I can actually use it. Because at the minute, it's just all full of junk still. Actually get a bench in and stuff. Anyway, I think we feel like we've come to a natural end there, mate.
Hit a little bit of a wall there, haven't we?
Well, yeah, I don't know about you, but it's got dark now. And I'm sitting
Dark and there's two fellas sitting in a sort of damp car on the seafront.
We did get a couple of funny
looking a bit odd, haven't we, mate?
Yeah.
So we want to go before we get arrested.
Yeah, absolutely. but yeah, it's really nice to be back chatting there with you, mate. And
absolutely.
I'm glad to hear you've had a good summer. And we will be back in a couple of 3 weeks and do it again, I expect, won't we?
Absolutely. More.
All right. Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll speak soon. Cheers. Bye-bye.
Bye.
So, ladies and gents, if you've enjoyed listening to the latest episode of the Homesteading UK podcast, please get onto our Facebook group, Homesteading UK podcast Facebook group. Come and follow us on Instagram and all those good places. And please do tell all your friends about us and how much you've enjoyed listening. Come back again next time. Thank you very much for listening. Cheers. Bye-bye.